From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in confounding Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development. I'm Lydia Simchich, and I make nice games.
I'm Steve McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Arthur Croy. I, too, make nice games.
For this week's episode, it's another Nice Games Jam. We've just been given a prompt, and we're going to try and come up with a complete game that you can play by the end of the episode. Will it work? We, and you, are about to find out. And so if everyone is ready, let's start.
Okay, so some news at the top of the show.
Yes.
I'm still sick.
Yeah.
Listeners are like, oh, Mark's back. Almost. Yeah. Almost.
What percentage of Mark is here today?
I mean, like the high 70s, I would say.
Okay. That passes.
That's functional.
Yeah.
I can do the show.
Okay.
But listeners can hear it in my voice, I imagine.
Yeah.
And then the other one is that I listened to the game jam that you did while I was away.
Oh, yeah.
Where I gave you the prompt. And it was amazing.
Right?
So good.
And like fully you could play it.
It's definitely one of those. I mean, yeah. I mean, there's going to be, Lydia, there's just more of these in the future. And we might have one at the end of the year. You're like, why aren't we just stopping everything we're doing to finish this game? And that was definitely one where I was like, oh, okay, like, there's a lot there.
No lie.
Thematic elements.
Yeah, yeah.
It was mechanically rich and,
yeah.
And like interacted with the theme in such like a fascinating, compelling way.
Yeah.
And nothing like the prompt I gave you.
It hit.
I mean, it started, but like, Steven, at one point you were like, saying like, why would Mark say this? Because like, you know me so well.
Yeah. And
that was really fun. But no, it wasn't at all what I expected you to go in, and it wasn't what I was pointing you at either, which was great. Like, that's what a prompt is for. It's just to get you started.
Yeah.
And I think where you ended up with it was really incredible.
I definitely spent a little bit of time in the shower thinking about how we could like actually make this game.
Yeah.
I think we could feasibly make the game if we just spent a Saturday together.
Yeah.
I think we could do that because a fair bit of
Oh, you
no,
sweet,
this is good.
You
this
sweet
good.
Summer child.
No.
Okay, put me in a room and have me research content as a first draft. Y'all figure out the kinks of the mechanics. Mm-hmm. We come back together, and I think we could have a decent prototype.
I mean, we have a number of candidates. It might be nice for us to get together sometime and do a little nice games camp where we just go through the jams of the last couple months and like pick a couple candidates and see
and work through them.
Maybe pick a couple of them to move a little bit further down the field, and then maybe like have them compete and see which one we want to like, and maybe take another crack at it.
Yeah,
I mean, because I think what has slowed our appetite down for it, for Steven and I anyway, is we GLOM was a huge smash success of that process. We got it all the way to store shelves. And then Roboston was a big process and produced what I believe is a perfect game.
Great.
But we just haven't had the time to sell it.
Sell it, yeah.
We never made any effort to sell that game.
True.
That's the weird thing about it. And then the next one was Dogpile, which was a simpler game. And so we decided to put some effort into that, and it didn't go as well.
Mm-hmm.
We got one offer that like wasn't very good.
And
I think that kind of just slowed our appetite for that process down a lot. With everything else going, we just got so lucky with GLOM. We knew it was lucky, but like, and not that we didn't expect it to be hard to sell the next one.
Yeah,
I think we talked about this enough on the show, but I think the fact that like it was definitely like a thing on top of everything else we were doing.
Yeah,
but I especially with I really want to get Roboston, in front of some publishers, and I would like to at least once a year like pick a game and do a little bit more with it. So, Lydia, to hear your excitement about it for this one. Hopefully that will get Steven and I back kind of like on board with the process.
I think it is more feasible than the dinosaur one. I know Ellen would love to see the dinosaur one made, but that one, that's the one I'm more feasibly looking down the road and going.
It's hard to do for our video game concept, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our video game concept sometimes I think would make better games if you were to like, rank a hypothetical finished version of all of our games.
Yeah.
But it's just not feasible production wise.
Right.
I think the one that we came up with last week is the most feasible that at least I've been a part of.
Yeah.
And has a lot of room that then we could has a lot of room for exploring the wackiness and extent at which we could take the theme and take a flavor of it, which itself is more flexible in terms of, what sort of direction would we want to go to? How would we pitch it?
Yeah.
What is most palatable, I guess, quote unquote, in terms of what people want to play versus what publishers would want to fund.
Yeah. Yeah. Another option, because that game works so well in the prototype phase using the timeline cards, which is something sometimes when we have really good, our very first Nice Games Jam was played with a deck of cards.
Oh, yeah.
And it's still a great game. Mm-hmm. And one of the things is there's a couple of our games that because of the way we have to prototype them, are able to be played with existing materials.
Yeah.
And some games that we do that for are obviously it's stand-in materials. I mean, it won't work technically. We just do it to test a process. And some of them, because of the limitations of the format, we design so well for an existing thing that a part of me thinks like actually it might be interesting to take a couple of those and make a little collection and, you know, sell it as a print and play. Like these are five games you could play with materials or other games you've got.
Totally.
I think this game that you guys made last time was is probably too good for that.
It's got the sauce.
It's got But it's like it's a candidate for that if, for example, we all decide we don't have enough time to like produce a full thing or whatever.
Yeah.
We wanted to actually have something finishable.
Yeah.
But I think I'm not proposing we do that with this, but I'm saying we have a lot of games that process.
We could totally do that, yeah.
You know.
And I think like if we did a Saturday exploration of how far we could take it, one of the major things would be how far would we diverge from the source material that is timeline? Yeah. Because one of the things that we had were limited on is we were going off of when things were invented. So we're assuming you get a mint condition vintage first edition ballpoint pen, for instance. And also we had that idea of having components of things and things made of other things and being able to take it apart. So that is not established in timeline.
You don't get any of the narrative stuff you wanted to establish with like where this places in time, who you give it to. Like that part would be a lot more of content creation, materials that you'd construct. Whereas timeline was just a good thing because it was, I mean, you had a basis on which to make a guess because it was real facts.
Right.
But it was just numbers that you just had in a box.
Yeah, it did the research side of content creation. It did the base minimum of content creation we needed in order to test the mechanic, which honestly is a huge time saver. Yep. That sort of thing is
great.
For sure.
It got it on its feet. But I think you're right in that it is not, you wouldn't use those dates with those things in this game.
Yeah.
If you were to do a real honest full version of it. Mm-hmm. I'm bored. I would love to. I mean, I would like to get involved because I was not part of making.
Please. Well, especially also because like having an outside perspective who it will help then once we start taking it farther and we go back and go, we look at where we've taken and go, is this still good? Is this direction we want to go? Yeah. Having an outside perspective that's still somewhat fresh but knows the history of it is going to be a better judge.
Well observed because that Dale has served that function a lot for our previous games where she will actually come swoop in with like sometimes a fix and sometimes an adjustment.
Yeah.
A design thought that would unlock it in ways that we were stuck with.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. That happened on Reravel. Mm-hmm. That happened on Glom.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened on Robustin as well.
Yeah.
And so it's always nice to have Dale like close by to all of it. But always able to be like not wedded to each component idea as we make them as we were when we did the shows.
Even if you're willing to kill a darling in any design or creation process, it's even if you are willing to throw away something, it is sometimes hard to tell if what you are willing to throw away is the thing you should be throwing away or which thing you should be throwing away. And that is as helpful as having an outside editor be able to say, this sucks, this is going astray from your original thought and what you said, what I find and you find to be good about your thing.
Yeah.
And so having that outside person almost give you, not permission, but to, what is a word?
Kind of guide which darlings to kill?
Yeah, I think it reminds me a lot of like when a programmer asks a designer, hey, which way should I implement this?
Yeah.
And sometimes, and then if you're a designer who's in a different mode, like art mode or programmer mode, you need another person to do that for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We got to do like a whole camp where we create a taxonomy and for all of our games that we haven't looked at in a while, we replay them all. We did this once for a Patreon thing.
Yeah, we replayed a few of them.
We replayed a couple old ones, but I think we should do like a really robust process, go all the way back and you know. I'm thinking of a game like Blob Ball, which was like really cool, but also a video game concept. Like let's just have a list somewhere we can refer to that categorizes everything. That's a little bit more specific than what we have now, which is on the website. You can view all the nice Game Jam games that have all the current rules.
Mm-hmm.
But it might be nice just internally to have a document that we can sort through and look back and like, oh, that one had promise. Let's try it again.
Yeah.
The one I always think of is Palace of Versailles. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah. It was like four... rows of cards or something.
It was a more abstract strategy kind of game
that
I think could be refined a lot.
Yeah,
And I think about some of our games, and Robustin was one of these where the final version really is nothing like the original
right.
in terms of mechanically it was very different. Whereas like Glom was like, you'd finished out of the gate, basically.
Yeah.
More or less. Mm-hmm. And some games are. And then some, Robustin was one where like we just had the kernel of it. And then where it ended up was so different.
Yeah.
But it couldn't have gotten there without what it used to be.
Right.
So think of something like Palace of Versailles. Like, I remember it being conceptually really fun, but also the core of that would be like it's abstract strategy. So you can't make it. So kind of you do want to play that with a deck of cards. Yeah.
I remember not liking that game very much because I lost.
Because you lost. Yeah. Game, yeah. Maybe that's why Which I like it fair. So much. I don't know. We'll have to revisit that one. I think that was the first jam. I mean, this is all memory lane stuff. Listeners may or may not be interested in these things, but that I think is the first game jam we ever made at this table.
Mm-hmm, I think so.
Because this table was in my apartment when I got right? I got it for us to record just as we all got vaccinated.
Yeah.
And we could record in person again. And you, me, and Ellen made the first game jam we did on this table.
Yeah.
That we now have in the clubhouse here at the Noble Robot office. And I bought the table in anticipation of bringing it somewhere, mm-hmm. right? Not knowing where that would be at the time. But anyways. All right. So that's all the energy I missed out on by not being in the last two episodes.
Uh-huh.
Thank you for indulging me. Dale has given us a prompt
yes.
for this game jam.
On paper.
And she wrote it down on a slip of paper.
Amazing.
Sealed it with a wax seal.
So uh-huh.
I'm just going to open it up. Your task starts now. okay. Here we go. Create a game with one of my favorite things, food.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
It cannot be about or have mechanics that are cooking. Think growing food, pairing foods, making an international food court, menu design, using foods in season. And then there's no period at the end of that sentence. So I think they'll just run out of paper, but I think we get the idea.
Okay.
I love food in general and specific. Food is one of my favorite things. I vibe with this. Personal goal for me, don't make another history game.
All right. Things about, game about food, but it can't be about cooking.
Well, I know Dale, this is hard mode for me because I think Dale knows this pretty well. I hate food.
Yeah.
Like, just conceptually, I'm not interested.
Are you the type of person who, like, if you could just hook yourself to an IV of supplements, that would give you all your nutrients?
It's
that?
A complication in my life, and I would, like, not
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, part of that is just is my taste, but part of it is because I have a chronic illness that, guides what, I've probably talked about it on the show before, but, like, it makes it, like, very annoying. I can't get to the point that a lot of people can get to where food becomes an indulgence or a celebration.
Yeah.
It is always for me a little math problem.
Yeah.
And so it's I just don't, other people in my condition will put in the extra effort required to like get a really like rich life, become a foodie or whatever. I got other things in my life, so I can't. Mm-hmm. So I am interested in things like from this prompt, like food production.
Yeah.
Supply lines, keeping a restaurant operated, like what do people want versus what do we offer, and like kind of that sort of resource management. That's maybe more, but that is not maybe in the spirit of.
Oh, I think it is. Totally is. Yeah. I mean, if it's not about cooking, then like it could still be about stuff around food.
One of the one that I really jive with, which is one of the reasons I love food, is the idea of food pairings.
Yeah.
And especially because like I grew up in a family that, really loved pairing food and wine together and understanding terroir, I think. I didn't take French, but the idea that how something is grown or produced influences how it tastes and how it feels. Mm. And my husband worked at a brewery right out of grad school. And so, learning that beer is also like that, chocolate is like that, coffee is like that, even cheese, the fact that, different way, what a cow eats and how it is raised will influence the taste of its milk. And that then influences the taste of its cheese as well as other factors.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that, a lot of variables that coalesce to change how something tastes. And by that virtue, what it would go with. And oftentimes it can make sense, but oftentimes it also is quite surprising. You wouldn't necessarily think, one of the stories my dad told me is he had to go to China or Hong Kong on a business trip. He got some fish with black bean sauce and he was going to get a red wine because of the black bean, or no, he was going to get a white wine because of it was fish. And the person there actually suggested a particular red. And it worked. there are all these kind of basic understandings and rules of pairings, like you don't have red wine with fish, or you don't have white wine with beef, but there are situations right. where because of the little flavors or the subtle nuances, they actually go better.
Because that's really boring to me.
Yeah.
I actually kind of always had the assumption that a lot of that was less about the food itself and more about the culture around food. Like the truism of that, like this doesn't go with that, mainly historically because it doesn't go with that. What I mean to say is like you could, like who cares, I guess, is kind of my point. But yeah. but am I wrong about that? Like is there and you don't need to prove it to me, but is it more than just like this is a truism because it's what people are used to and prefer? Or is there something about like, oh, there's actually something in there's a protein in this that when I combined with this actually makes this less noticeable, and that's the thing we want people to, you know what I mean? Is there like science to it?
There are sciences to it. I don't have the chemistry background to be able to talk about exactly how these sorts of things work, but there are best practices for a reason.
Yeah.
Because when in doubt, this would probably work. But because, as I mentioned before, like how you make something, how you season something, you know, just what that year, was there a drought that made all the jalapenos extra spicy? You know, that is something that is very real and very tangible effect of how something was grown that then changes how it is handled and eaten, that then would influence what it goes with. Mm-hmm. There is a like and also, you know, the individual characteristics of things. So like jalapenos are very zesty and bright and spicy, but habaneros are more fruity.
Yeah.
And so because of that, yeah, if they're the same level of spice and you just want spice, you could substitute. But if you wanted some other component and be able to bring out that flavor, you do a different technique. You add a different ingredient because chemically then it is not breaking down what you want or is breaking down something you don't want. That's why, for example, like there is a chemical reason why for really gamey meats, you marinate, or for things like liver that have a lot of minerals, you marinate them in milk. Because the milk helps draw out some of those minerally more blood-related flavors and leaves it to better tasting. It doesn't taste like you're eating blood or dirt. That makes it a lot better.
Yeah.
There's, you know, things that make it more tender, and that then can allow other flavors to shine.
So maybe we play with this tension a little bit. I mean, this could all be kind of like an educational game where...
Oh, no, I foiled again.
It's not history necessarily.
Well, yeah. I'm thinking back to the last episode where you were talking about alien auctions.
We're bringing it back.
You wanted to return to that. Now, Dale says we can't have cooking.
Right.
Right? But if it's pairings, then that's sort of an interesting sort of like final step, right?
Okay, yeah.
So maybe you are at a restaurant and you find yourself and you're an alien in a disguise, you're a human on an alien planet. So you're an alien on that world.
Got it. Okay.
And you need to find these pairings, but you don't have the cultural knowledge to make them.
Okay.
So you have to come up, you have to
kind of figure it out.
So it's a little bit like, Overcooked or that kind of genre where you need to like satisfy an order.
Yeah.
But it's more like sommelier kind of where someone gives you I want something blah blah blah, and like they want your recommendation.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, okay, what do I put with what? Yeah. I don't know anything about any of this food.
Yeah.
And this is all like Greek to me.
Yeah.
I guess
that's interesting.
Query: would we want to be doing it alien food to alien food, or do we want to do it alien food to Earth food? Because that would replicate a lot of the some of the interesting pairings of things now, where it's like, oh, we now in the West, like kimchi is in the United States, kimchi is now fashionable. Mm-hmm. People are putting kimchi in things that are not just Korean food because they go, okay, we now understand it's spicy, it's tangy, it's this texture. And they're finding things that work with it. Or in the same, you know, example I gave with my dad and wine, because China doesn't, it's not a red wine drinking country traditionally. Do we want it to be alien to alien food, or do we want it to be like you're a sommelier working with an alien chef to prepare like an international banquet or something?
So I think this sort of speaks to my feelings on the subject. You know, famously lobster used to be seen as like working class garbage meat.
There was a law in Massachusetts that you couldn't feed your servants lobster more than a certain amount of times in a week because it was considered inhumane.
Whereas nowadays people talk about all of its like rich subtle notes, and I'm like, did that always exist? Because a lot of people thought they had legislation on the fact.
Yeah.
So that bolsters sort of my view that like this is all made up, but like. Or rather, that food is so complicated that you can view it through any lens.
Yeah.
And so, but this is a question for like, what do we want this game to say, which may not necessarily be my opinion. I think it would be interesting to make it all alien content.
Yeah.
So that the player has nothing to base it on, regardless of their knowledge of how human food is best paired.
And then there's no history.
I think we should, to honor both of like the tension between us and our perspectives. And I think what is the fundamental truth is lobster was always lobster and it tasted like lobster.
Right.
Right.
But was there attention on lobster in a favorable or fashionable light? So in such a way that we noticed that it was delicious in the way that, and in a moment when that could be appreciated.
Yeah. So a system like this could be the early going could be you figuring out what people want. And then the later going could be like figuring out the actual science of it to give people novel solutions. Like the end of this game could you be inventing the culture around.
Well, what I was actually thinking is as a complete outsider, you wouldn't be biased.
Yeah.
And exactly so right, you yeah. in the beginning of the game, it is entirely feasible that you are like, hey, this space lobster and this space butter is really good together. And everyone is like skeptical, but then that is mind-blowing to them.
Yeah,
like that is what gets you on the map early in the game because you don't have these preconceived biases. You can look at their core qualities and say, that sounds good.
Yeah,
and
I like that.
It blows everyone's mind.
I think that feels like the ultimate like victory condition is being able to look at the reality of whatever it is, whatever combination of things that we decide work. But I also kind of would love there to be a challenge. When you start the game, you're in undercover mode. You should be trying to figure out what people think goes well together, because that's all. Because you don't have the credibility yet to rock the boat and introduce lobster to the main upper class.
Okay, so in that case, I think narratively, because I want to honor the genius of beginner mind.
Yeah.
But you're saying that can't be that can't be an asset at the beginning of the game. That has to be an accomplishment at the end.
Evaluate your own success, right? Like what tools do you use as a player to actually, because you know nothing, right? So you can do trial and error. You can put these two things together, serve it, and people could react. And then you can be like, all right, I guess that's a way to learn. Mm-hmm. And that's how you would understand what culturally people are into on this alien planet. But then the next level deep is actually trying to understand more about, and I'm completely lost on how we turn this into a mechanic, but you actually can figure out what these things are so that you can make unique things that go together that you can serve to people. And a bunch of people would be like, oh no, this is not what goes together. And then a bunch of other people would be like, I'm just evaluating this objectively and I think it's great. And then you having to decide, well, who's right?
Yeah.
Because you don't know. Nothing on this alien planet tastes good to you.
I think then the beginning of the game, it should be framed in the sense of you're trying to survive and assimilate.
Yeah.
Because then we very clearly set the premise that you need to understand what is normal, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And then once you are accepted and seen as an authority to some extent, that then gives you the permission to start going out of the box because you have boundaries you can push without risking your safety of your, like how you've established yourself in this world.
Right.
I don't know if that means that you're someone pretending to be an alien. I don't know if that means that like you're an intergalactic immigrant and you're already kind of disadvantaged and you're just trying to get your feet wet.
Yeah. What's the universe? What's this world? Yeah.
But we essentially first phase, you need to gain credibility for knowing the rules. And then once you hit a point, you can start breaking the rules as an established knowledge base.
Yeah. Okay. So, Steven.
Yes.
You've been taking notes and here.
You've at least I've been listening.
Yeah. So, we've come up with a story framework.
Oh, no.
And probably not much more.
I can see where this is going. You want me to come up with mechanics?
Well, what I'm asking is like, do we have anything here, or should we like walk back a little bit?
Because
we usually don't go this far in this direction.
I guess that's a good point. We typically do kind of come up with a mechanical hook before.
I usually think of narrative, but I also think because you probably also have an interesting perspective on food as well. That's somewhere maybe between me and Mark.
It is basically in the middle. Yeah. Because I do like food, but I also, because of my allergy, I have to. It's stressful for me to eat new foods, so I don't eat a lot of new foods very often. I don't have strong opinions on pairings and things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. I like eat popcorn with like wine.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I like wine. I like popcorn.
Popcorn with taco seasoning. That's just saying.
Do you like those things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess. So, I don't have strong opinions on like.
Put butter on his popcorn?
I put sometimes. Just not at the movie theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, like
a lot of butter.
You like it plain and you don't drink anything with it?
Mm-hmm.
He's a weird man.
I am weird. Very strange. It's fine. that's my life.
Yeah.
I think I definitely do like the direction of the narrative that this game is going in.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I'm definitely struggling to figure out what you're actually doing in the game. Like actively
And
the mechanics.
How can we do this without us actually being a chef?
Yes.
And also, like, how do we do this without it being a multiple choice game?
Yeah.
I think there's a couple things. There's how do you analyze the food in the sense of we're tasting it, we're smelling it, we're looking at it, we're feeling it. So there's smell, taste, texture. But then there's also the question of aliens, are they perceiving things that humans can't? Or whatever, like, race of alien are, like, is it like mantis shrimp that can see infinitely more colors than we can? And so we have to have other ways to get information for a aspect of food that we don't necessarily know. And then how do we determine what is a good pairing and what isn't a good pairing and have it essentially, like, we can't have it be something where you just pull up a table on the wiki and then you 100% the game. I think that would be
boring. Oh yeah. I suppose it's true. So one thing that I just thought of that it's not quite a mechanic, but it would be interesting if, like, the aliens, the way that they distinguish what foods they like or not is not necessarily the taste, but other qualities of the food.
I like that.
So like the color or the size or the serving size or the texture. But not like the food, the chewing texture, but something else about it. Like, I don't know. It's like
the hand, like the hand, quality of picking up.
And you don't know
hands.
Any of these things going in, and you may not know it for a long time.
Yeah.
Right. You may, and this is true in the real world as well. Like people like something or they take to it and nobody knows why.
Right.
It just is.
Mm-hmm.
And like there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But like as someone who doesn't know anything about how this world works, you do have to kind of, at least initially, and maybe to keep this from being a cooking game, the mechanic is just very simple. It's just a matter of like, and maybe that's how these restaurants work, is like people order, you know, categories of things and then you're the last person on the line in the kitchen and you just put two things together.
Like, I was actually
you're the pairing person, you know.
Kind of in that vein, there is the idea of eating with your eyes, and there's like plating is such an important thing in dining.
Yeah.
And that is also related to what you put next to each other, one thing on top of another.
That speaks to what Steven's talking about, the sort of the indefinables of like what makes a fine dining experience, which is like there's an inherent absurdity to it, but like people treat it seriously because it has a real impact on people's experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's. And if you see that from an abstract alien perspective, I think that can give you, one, an appreciation for how absurd it is, but also for appreciation for how it really impacts people.
Yeah, so like maybe one of the things is literally putting the food onto the plate, and that determines whether or not this...
And how much of it, right, to, like you said, that might make a difference for people.
Yeah, so if you put it on the northeast side of the plate, like people are like, oh, this tastes good, and you put it on the northwest side of the plate, oh, this tastes bad or whatever.
Yeah,
not taste, but I don't like it, you know.
Yeah.
So just speaking to Lydia, your thing about how do we prevent people from 100%ing something like this?
Yeah,
I'm kind of kicking the can down the road for us, because I'm imagining this is a video game for one.
Yep.
And I'm imagining that it's a simulation in that what is popular is not something that is on a table you can look up.
Mm-hmm.
Like either it's a roguelike in the sense that it's different every time, and so you just have to learn the skill of it rather than the facts of it.
Yeah,
is one way to do it. The other thing is that your, like, the popularity of your restaurant could influence what people are into, and so like success begets success in that sense, but that also means that suddenly you're now, your options become narrower and narrower because you are now guiding things by based on what you're doing. So this is sort of speaks to sort of like gamer logic as well, which is like the gamers like doing the same thing over and over again. Like they like spamming the boss by hitting the same attack from the same corner of the map. Like, because it's because it works. And maybe we can make a game where that where you're punished a little bit by that. Like the more you do that, the more successful that is, and therefore the better at it you have to be. And so diminishing returns, perhaps. Whereas if you are more creative and more diverse in your selections, then that could be. So that's a complicated simulation, right?
Here's the gamer journey that I'm really vibing with from this conversation so far.
Okay.
Go into this thing. You are a plater at an alien restaurant or something. You, as a human who tastes things and smells things and has preconceived notions about what goes with what, you plate it things together on the same plate as if they were to taste good together. Then you get feedback from the customers and stuff saying, like, that is not centered on the sensation of taste, but on the sensation of touch, on visuals and other things.
Sure. Yeah.
Maybe it's other senses, essentially, sensory inputs. And so then you then have to start reevaluating food's compatibility, not on taste at all.
Yeah.
And then that's the emotional journey and the intellectual journey you go through. I think that's really interesting because that also makes me think of, well, why would this be an alien thing? There might be aliens that are like mantis shrimps that can see a bajillion colors. There might be aliens that only see like UV and heat.
Yeah.
There could be aliens with no eyes at all, but have very sensitive hands or tendrils. And so being able to find their food and actually sense it is an important thing.
Yeah.
I think that that answers to me, why is this an alien place? Because you're serving aliens that are going to be obtaining nutrients in different ways.
Right.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And the analog for the real world is like that, like foods are, sometimes we get like really like almost offended, like when you find out that like the food you like has been dyed, it's not actually the color it really is.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, why would they do that? And like that seems, like there's a reason why they would do that.
Yeah.
And because it's like, it isn't always just taste.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that's not something we sort of understand or appreciate about the real world. And so dragging that into something that's more textual in this game, I think would be an interesting, it justifies its sort of alienness in the narrative, but I think it also provides a hook that you could take into the real world.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting.
I think so. Then let's figure out what sense criteria these foods will be evaluated on.
Mm-hmm.
Options that are within our human realm are touch. They are sight. We also have potentially temperature and spiciness.
Temperature is fun.
So spiciness is not a flavor. Capsaicin basically hijacks your taste, but the part of your tongue that registers heat and says, this is hot, and that's why it's spicy. But it's not actually a flavor in itself, and most animals can't taste capsaicin. That's why birds can eat peppers, and that's how they spread the seeds.
Right, and that's why, that's a theory of why some peppers are so hot, is because there are certain animals that not birds, but animals will avoid them, but birds won't.
So it
helps them spread those seeds. And then human, and that's why they can exist in the wild. Extreme, and most hot peppers are, you know, made by humans and for, you know, bottles of hot sauce with like cartoons on them.
Oh yeah,
to exaggerate, but but yeah, in the wild you can have that sort of that reality of why those things exist. I think on our alien world, we would have a couple of different qualities like that, that maybe we wouldn't ever fully explain to the player.
Yeah.
But it would just, you'd learn their names and understand what it is. And so that would be a proxy for taste, is like these five different qualities. And you were like, I don't know how the alien experiences it, but I know they like a little bit of this and a little less of that. Some people like a lot of this, and those people are weird. And some people can't stand any of it. And then you can like draw the analog.
Yeah.
You know.
So then we need, there's two phases, I think, here. We need to be able to, like you would as a sommelier, taste the wine, then so that way you know what's in the pantry, and then understand and think about how to pair the wine from your wine cellar to the food that you are to accomplish a certain combination.
Yeah.
phase one, how are we as humans going to evaluate and understand what each thing has and is quality wise?
I think there's a lot of, I think the early game is fumbling around in the dark and making mistakes and like figuring out what goes together. Because like, I don't think you as a, I think important to this game is that you as the human will never be able to evaluate this food the way the aliens do.
Mm.
And so you have to learn, you have to be empathetic to their needs, and that's all you'll ever understand, which works for a video game because you as a player are never going to be able to taste this food anyway.
Right.
But we need to, if we're going, we need to be able to start small enough, because if you're starting double blind, you want to be able to glean some information.
Well, you just limit the amount of ingredients that you have access to. Foods you have access to.
But also you serve a lot of people and you get a lot of feedback.
But also you would not serve something that you haven't tasted yourself, ideally.
Well, if you're caught in this situation, you super would. And you'd cross your fingers and hope no one notices.
Okay.
Right. That's the comedy of it, I guess.
The question is, okay, if we're coming multiple days, why would you not sneak in and start tasting the food before your next shift so you really don't mess up?
Well, you could, but you're a human being. That information will be irrelevant.
Oh, okay.
The taste isn't important.
Like, you can down it all and it's all going to just taste like, you know, it's like all this is pinto beans. Like, you can subsist and you don't have a problem with that, but like you don't understand why anybody notices the difference between the green ones and the orange ones.
I just think that we need to have a couple things that are in common or are able to be gleaned and have a touchstone. I just want to make sure that that happens so that way you have a footing or you have a moment where it's like, okay, I can't fully understand why people go crazy for these pinto beans, but I enjoy that they are creamy and they also say they like the texture.
Well, you're still looking at all of the foods and things. Like, there are still properties of the foods that exist other than the taste that you can observe.
I mean, they could be written down on the package.
Yeah.
But you don't know what aliens like necessarily.
Right.
And so you have to serve it and find
out. Oh, I guess that's the thing. I was wondering, okay, so if that's the thing is like, if we're going based on sight that humans can see versus a thing that humans can never see, if those five qualities, we do not have any overlap in our ability to sense those five qualities of food that the aliens are sensing, then we're totally flying, completely blind.
Well, I think there'd be some and some that wouldn't.
So okay.
You have two ingredients on the shelf. And they look exactly the same to you.
Yeah.
But they would look different to aliens. And the only way for you to know the difference is to serve one to one alien and another one to another alien paired with the same thing.
Okay.
And see what the feedback says. And so I think that's why it's important for you to be pretty blind to a lot of the how aliens will react to this and not be able to know that yourself, is because you're building a database of knowledge through experience. And the knowledge you build is entirely based on your experience rather than on reading a reference manual or evaluating it yourself because you can't. And what that means is that when you discover something someone likes as a player, as a video game player, you'll be like, that works. I get 5 points for that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do that again and get 5 more points. There's the tension there between or loss aversion and risk taking. So like, you have all these ingredients that are all these opportunities that you could try, but a lot of them will fail.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever proxy, I mean, I don't think, maybe you don't have to worry about getting fired. Maybe there's something. I kind of like about this world that, like, you're a human undercover, but under no threat of being uncovered.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No one's breathing down your neck. You're just like fish out of water. And so you're not going to get fired, but like your satisfaction will go lower. So something,
yeah.
Some risk that you take as a player, and the more successful you are, the more satisfaction points. Maybe then that unlocks new ingredients, so it's a little bit more of like a number go up kind of game.
Sure.
Thought process. Maybe if you do poorly on this planet, you're going to get transferred to another planet, and that means you're going to have to learn an entirely new set of things.
So basically,
you're vying because there's something very funny about like. You're a creature in another planet and your only concern is job security.
Yeah.
Like, you're not worried about getting outed or you're not worried about being killed by pitchforks. You just really need this job to pay your rent.
Right.
Because
you don't have enough arms for all the other jobs on this planet.
Exactly. And then, or even as Jen, it's like you spent so long, like you tried so hard to learn this particular culture's taste, and then you're going to be shipped to another planet. You're going to have to start from square one. That sucks.
Yeah,
like that's the crux of roguelikes, right?
That's a roguelike thing.
That might be the thing
yeah.
is, oh no, I'm going to be shipped to another planet. And then that's what starts the new game where you have your first two ingredients are different.
Yeah. I mean, I am kicking a lot down the road in terms of like the simulation. Cause yeah. like, I think this would need to be an emergent system rather than something we yes. would just determine ourselves, which means we could have it be roguelike-y, where it could be the correct answers could be different for each run through.
Yeah.
Which would make it replayable and also hard to cheat.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
I think it'd be kind of, I'm imagining it something similar to like The Binding of Isaac, where you have the pills, where the pills are different colors mm-hmm. and what each color pill does changes every run. So if you have a yep. white capsule with purple speckles and you take it in one run, it may give you x-ray vision. That's not true when you do another run. It may give you explosive diarrhea.
And I think you said it earlier, is it's all the same ingredients because these ingredients come from all sorts of planets.
Right.
Yeah.
But when you get shipped off to another planet, it's a different population. They'll have different reactions.
Yes, they have different tastes on how something should be used.
Yeah.
Like and one planet, even, cheese never goes on seafood. Another planet, cheese totally down for seafood.
Yeah. And that could be because the pairings work for the different palates of the different aliens. But that could be, some things could work very well for multiple of these cultures. And so you understand that there's a little bit more of a truism to it. But then yeah. you're like, oh, but all of these planets are in the same star cluster.
Yeah.
Or something. You know, so you can kind of each playthrough. And it could either be roguelike. Which, you know, I'm not a fan of that genre, but this suits it really well.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be a matter of like, oh, you could progress through the galaxy and earn this reputation as this incredible food pairing, you know, artist.
Yeah.
Just through the scientific method rather than through any kind of like sense of taste of your own.
I like the idea of it being, I don't know if this is technically, would be in roguelike, but I like the idea that the galaxy is the same. And the thing is, and what is different is when you have to start over, you start at a different starting planet.
Yeah.
But the goal is always to cover the entire galaxy at some point.
Yeah. I'd like that. That's good.
I think that's fun. It very much speaks to me in the ways that because of how different cultures and diasporas move and establish food locations and menus, that the food is changed to the palate of the culture.
Yeah.
So like that's why we have Japanese curry that is so different from Indian curry where it first came from. That's why like American Chinese food is one thing. There's also like a very distinct variation of Chinese cuisine in Peru
mm-hmm.
because there were a lot of Chinese immigrants that opened up shops and they have like Peruvian Chinese food is its own thing.
Yeah.
There's that. Also like Japanese Chinese food is very much its own thing.
Right.
And they emphasize some things, de-emphasize others. Different things become quintessentially that food.
Yeah.
I think that's very much what we're speaking about, where it's the same ingredients, the same stuff, but how people respond to it. That's at least the earth-based food culture touchstone I'm going to hold on to for this.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, you could have a lot of success on one planet and you can try to introduce that to another planet and then you'll find that it sort of works, but you got to change it a little bit.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that could be the sort of proxy for that same idea. And that could be very intuitive to players, I think.
Yeah.
They sort of understand and maybe even, and then they can start to get creative and then their creations will fail or their creations will have some success and then they'll decide like, do I want to lean into this or do I want to hang up my apron on this planet and go to the next one or whatever? I mean,
yeah.
We could make this very where you can sort of like every season you could decide to go somewhere else or you could stick around and try to hone your craft
your
here
empire.
Some more or whatever.
Yeah. So, it's been a little bit since we talked about this, but we have 3 items that you can get on our merch quote-unquote store. You can get the Nice Games Club t-shirt. It has our logo on it. It's nice and soft. It's a nice color. I've constantly hearing rave reviews about our t-shirts, which is, you know, excellent.
Yeah, it's like, are these people trying to butter us up or something? But like, no, they genuinely like the t-shirt.
But also, the buttering it up is working. So, but yeah, check out the t-shirt. We have a pillow now. It's a nice yellow color. It's got the cartridge logo on it,
mm-hmm.
which is fun. And it's also very soft. And then you can also get Glom, the game that was designed right here on this show, as well.
Yeah.
On our website.
Which is not soft. So if you don't like soft, you should get Glom.
Right.
Wait a minute, hold on. I assume there's one handy URL to get all these things.
There is, in fact.
What is that?
Nicegames.club/merch.
Okay, that's great. Now I don't have to get all three of these things.
No, but no. You should.
Okay. I could get one or two or three.
You can't, in fact.
And any number of any of them, I imagine.
Yes.
Well.
Yes, several copies of them.
Well. As many easy installments of purchases from the store.
I'm a person who likes options, so this is perfect for me. And probably for you too, dear listener. Nicegames.club/merch.
I'm still struggling to understand how to play the game properly. So to be clear, I think a lot of this stuff, all this stuff's great.
We're in game design document territory here. We're pretty far from like actual mechanics.
That's fine, but I think that like I think we should have some kind of a foundation as to how you would actively like participate in this game.
Yeah.
So we could.
I think that we should start on the premise of like every good diner game where you have two foods. Let's pretend. So we have two fruits.
So, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Well, I guess I did. But but one thing I'm concerned about, the way that we've been talking about it, is I'm concerned that we are kind of building Doodle God and that like you just like combine some stuff and you get a new thing and people might like it or they don't like it. I would like there to be more granularity, and that's part of why I was thinking about like the position where you put that thing on the plate can be a factor,
or I agree.
If the food is upside down, quote unquote,
because you'll be able to, you should be able to make changes by degrees.
Yeah.
So either this was successful, I'm going to move it a little bit over here. Is it more successful or less successful?
Right.
And then that could be, and there could be multiple dimensions of that. So there could be what color is the thing, where it is on the plate, and of course because you are in a restaurant, and yes, you can't taste it yourself. You can look at the box, and it has some numbers on it.
Yeah,
and
I think
you can understand what's a little bit more than this and that. But so you can't change too many variables.
Yeah,
but you also can't change too few because it will take too long.
I think we need to start with. We have the variable of ingredient. I think like let's make that two, and then let's figure out what the other variables are. So that way we can start making those things. So we have
aim for that. Yeah.
Let's say we have two very identical ingredients. I'm imagining two basically the same tomatoes just in my brain.
Right.
Okay.
What are the
basically the same farms?
What are the what other variable do we feel would matter to an alien that is not cooking? Just purely we have positionality in the serving thing. We have does it matter what it's served in?
That's cool.
beer and wine have different glasses for different beers and wines because the glass allows the scent molecules to move in different ways. Mm-hmm. So it helps you smell some wines and beers better than others.
Yeah.
Or that's why champagne flutes are tall is because that helps the carbonation travel, right?
Oh, okay. That makes sense, I guess. I like the idea of containers being part of that.
Okay, so you have like two ingredients. We have a bunch of different containers.
Yes.
And then there's positionality within the container?
Yes. I was also thinking orientation of the foods. I said like
I feel like rotate we could not, come up with a thousand variables.
I suppose.
And I think a final version of this game would have that many, I think.
Yeah.
Many, and like some that you don't even do that much, or some that don't matter that much.
Right.
And so that are red herrings or whatever. But I think, there should be so many different ways to tweak it. Like an irritatingly amount of ways to modify the thing, I think, because I think you should feel a little bit like you can do anything, and some things will matter and some things won't.
Yeah, and that's kind of what speaks to the culture of the food too, right? Yeah. Like, because like it might not matter that like you put this on the top right of the plate or put it.
And it also speaks to a lot of the sort of ephemeral, metaphor is the wrong word, but in the neighborhood we have this taco place, Rusty Taco.
Yeah.
You go there and like they serve everything in like a tin tray.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because that's the aesthetic, right? And that actually kind of matters in a way that is like you can be kind of really dismissive of it, like, oh, this is just it's like a trick to make you think it's a food truck.
Yeah.
But like that's the vibe they're trying to give. It's an honest costume.
Yeah.
It's part of the aesthetic of the place.
Yeah, well, yeah. Also, and so I think that there should be a lot of those choices you make, and those can be they could be serving the culture of the thing, but it could also be that could be the opportunity for you to influence what people are into.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I think of is it individually plated or is it served family style?
Yeah.
That is that is a very big difference in vibe and occasion and cultural mm-hmm. expectation, because that's like in dim sum places, they have the round tables with the Lazy Susans because it's all family style. You're expected to share.
Yeah.
As opposed to if you're in a fine dining tasting menu, you're going to be served your own set of the courses.
Yeah.
Unless the place very specifically says, we serve this family style, and that is intentionally part of the experience they want to have.
Yeah. And there's a whole thing with fine dining where, like, those plates are enormous. Mm-hmm. And there's hardly any food on them. Mm-hmm. But that is very important to the experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's
part of it. I mean, because they're going to be giving you 11 of those big plates with tiny foods.
Well, I mean so that you're meant to savor it and really pay attention to the notes and details in a way. And that encourages you as a user of this material, the right. diner, mm-hmm. to do that. Whereas if you just take a spoonful out of a bowl, like... how real is that? Like, how much of that is emotion and how much of that is science? And that's the sort of alchemy of these kinds of things.
I have that same kind of, I can see this matters, but I don't understand why it matters when I go to art galleries and big frames and some art have no frames and the walls are painted certain colors and other colors, they're white. There's definitely a lot of purpose in how it's framing things to be seen.
Right.
But I have never figured out what the pattern is and what the best practices are.
And I think that's actually, this is my feeling about art, which is that there isn't one best way to do a thing, right? Because there isn't
like we've hit commonality. Oh my gosh, we understand each other now.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I think there's that's the tension of a game like this, where you're trying to come up with what's the right way to do it.
Yeah.
And we should be continually beating you down with, like, there's many right ways to do it.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And again, this is a huge burden on whatever simulation system we come up with.
Yeah, we're not making this game.
No. But, and so I think that, like, when you say, like, what types of variables are there? I think there are many, many, many upon many.
Yeah.
And I think as you would get more and more as you progress. I think that's a
sure.
So, for purposes of, we don't really have, I don't think we can make a full prototype even
right
now.
No.
But what would be maybe the first things you see? Like, let's imagine if we were to try to build a prototype, a digital prototype, what would be the three variables we would focus on that are different, that would demonstrate this, the efficacy of a system like
that? So, one of the things that I like about what you were proposing, Lydia, is that you have two ingredients and they're just two types of tomatoes and they look almost identical.
Yeah.
And so that I think just having the two ingredients is, I think, core to it. Like, that's the little tutorial area. But you learn right away that you're like, I'm supposed to make pairings of these two tomatoes. They're the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's important to the spirit of this game.
Well, maybe you have one piece on the plate that is fixed that you can't change. And
sure.
You have to find the tomato that.
Yeah, that was someone else cooked a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, and you got to pick between the two tomatoes that looks
and plate it with that.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah,
I like that.
You know a little bit about those tomatoes, but you can't make any kind of joke. I also, you don't really know what those things mean.
Yeah.
I love the like loss of language or like the lexical gap of food where it's like it's this. I don't know what it's the left tomato, and I only know it as the left tomato. Yeah. End of time. That's the left tomato. That's the right tomato.
Yeah.
Don't ask me what it is.
Yeah.
Don't move it. How do we get feedback from the customers? Because that's the one thing that I think we are culturally. What is the cultural expectation in alien food places that then immediately will give you the feedback on what you just prepared? So that in a quick enough way and in a meaningful enough way that you are able to rapidly change your tactics.
So I think that in the fiction of this world, this is the world building I'm doing right now, live on air.
All right.
Is there's the intergalactic dining consortium has implemented a system where everyone, like, there's a universal rating system that everyone gives.
Yeah.
Now, most video games just call these stars and don't explain where they come from. Right? But I think we can do some silliness here.
Okay, yeah.
And say, you know, this is like a rating system. So the question we have,
can we do a like a Michelin star riff and have it be like a?
I think we'd have to. I think we couldn't get away
Tim
with not
star.
Doing it. Yeah,
Michael Tim.
Yeah, similarly unrelated to the field, right?
Yeah.
So the question we have then, I think for a prototype, it would just be that there is all aliens have the same taste and we'll all give you the same feedback. But I think we maybe want to make that a more interesting system.
Yeah.
Further on, we'd also have, you know, a system where you can look out and assess, oh, tall aliens like this, short aliens like that, and you don't know that so much. At first, you'd have to puzzle that out.
Yeah.
That's what's different about them is one is tall, one is short. Or like these two, I cannot tell any difference, but there must be something different about them. Maybe I'll talk to them.
Yeah.
And then I can determine what makes them, you know. So there's a whole another, you know, part of the game to that,
which sure.
is more interesting. Yeah. I think the other thing we'd want to determine is like if not only would people have different tastes, but like maybe some of them just like they lie on their way out. So like,
why are you adding? Okay.
No. So the reason I'm saying this is because if we want to do where all the feedback is the same, then that means that that's simple. We could prototype that. We can make that work. Even maybe the early game is like that. It's a kind of diner where the food is such that it's hard to have a different opinion.
Yeah.
You know. But what I'm saying is that implies what we need is high volume. So when you're not plating you have five plates in front of you with the one protein item on.
Yep.
You have the two types of tomatoes.
Yep.
You can then put
it somewhere on the plate.
On all five plates.
Yep.
So every action gives you five pieces of feedback.
Yeah.
So then you could, if I'm going to do them all the same, then the feedback going to come in is going to be a little different, but it's going to be in the same direction.
Oh, like Mastermind kind of.
A little bit. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But I'm going to say, well, I want to, because you get like points and that can help you get more ingredients or move to better restaurants.
Sure.
You want to be successful early. So you can say, well, I'm going to I'll do two of this type of tomato, three of that type of tomato.
Yeah.
And then you get the feedback and the feedback is not useful to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's not, you don't know why someone said this or that.
Right.
So there's a little bit of, so if we want to have a patronage that does not have all the same opinion, the only way to really do that well is to have like a mechanic that deals in high volumes.
Okay. So have you ever seen in Japan, they have these places where you can get food and you eat standing up at a counter. They're designed to be very simple food that you eat quickly because you just need food and then you go.
Sure.
There are a lot of times like soba noodle shops where it's like soba noodle broth and you pick your toppings and then you get served.
Okay.
How about something in that vein? You always are going to have five customers. They come in front of you. They're sitting in front of you. You make the five things. You serve them. And then they give their feedback. They're on their way. Five more people came. Like very much like these. This is, you're working at like a kind of that standing noodle shop in a government center.
Yeah.
And it's the lunch break. That would give high volume. And in the sense of if you're working in that same vein, like a small diner or dive bar where you, or a sushi bar if you're more upscale, where you are directly seeing the customer, the food in front of them, and their reactions to it before they leave, that might be the format. And if it's the super simple, like just get in, get out, eat food format, that would give you the high volume.
Yeah, I like that. And I mean, I'm already imagining like, The mechanic is that you prepare multiple things at once for multiple diners at once.
Yeah.
And so that could be the counter. It could also be that, because we're not making a Overcooked type game where there's a time crunch.
Right.
Right. You could just, we're not going to worry about that. I don't think.
No, please don't.
Yeah. Even in the full final version, let's not worry about that.
My working memory will not be able to handle this if we have a timer.
It's the kind of like player stress that other games do better. And simpler systems are better for.
And would want, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a good system for that.
Because it relies on simplicity and certainty and expectations of what the food is.
Yeah, yeah, and that's not what this system is. So you could have the five people at a counter, but you could also have the 30 people at the lunch rush. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, okay.
What are we serving for lunch today?
Uh-huh.
So that could, you could serve everybody the same thing or the same thing. And then you could use that to experiment within that cohort if you have some confidence, you know, or whatever. And so that could be the restaurants you move through of different types. But I think certainly for a prototype and certainly start out with, I think five people pulling up at a counter, all ordering roughly the same thing, and then you getting all that feedback, I think is a good start.
Yeah, I mean,
and maybe ultimately it is just you are just going from different kind of counter restaurant to different kind of counter restaurant.
This feels like an auto battler. Almost, where it's like you set up your meal, your plan of the day, the auto battler happens where all the customers go in and it, you are making the thing you have set up an assembly line for that day. Yeah. And then you get the, you get, you see it going and then you get the breakdown at the end and you go, oh, okay, I got, there was this many customers and they liked, and I did this particular thing and they responded this particular way. It feels like, it feels like food auto battler.
I can see okay. that.
What makes sense for that then is maybe this is a world where not only is there this, this system of this rating system that everyone participates in, but restaurants are such that they serve a different thing every day to everybody. And so you don't need to prepare five plates and you just prepare one thing for that day.
Yeah.
And then at small restaurants, only a couple people come in. At larger restaurants, a lot of people come
in. Yeah, I was going to say you're effectively designing this special.
Yeah.
And so like you would just like,
and then the feedback you get is can be varied because because you are serving the same exact combination to everybody.
Yeah.
And that's mechanically that simplifies things. And also it's a little bit of world building.
I think that also does make the idea of this particular alien or this particular situation is suited more to this combo of decisions a lot more feasible, because in an auto battler like Super Auto Pets, you can make a build that is very, very good and solid, but if you hit the wrong kind of team that has a very particular other build, happens to accidentally exploit your weakness, you could die. And I think that that is more of the compelling thing in terms of, especially since we're talking on the scale of cultural expectations, cultural tastes, and knowledge, we can't necessarily be bogged down by the individual, because when you're playing a game like Diner Dash and someone gets a really weird thing and you get it wrong, you're like, oh, whatever, it's just one person. But that's not the scale of feedback worth we are thinking about and needing, so that shouldn't be the scale of interaction that we are designing for.
Sure.
So we're designing, I like the idea of you're designing the special of the day. You have that as your like little, you essentially set what your assembly line is going to be. You get that feedback and then you have to adjust for the next day based. And that also would work very well in terms of how we would want to switch up ingredients and bowls and things, where you like a lot, you know, you might have X number of ingredient come in because it's just a new day. That's what's in season. Well, that means now you have to figure out what to do with it.
Yeah.
You know, suddenly asparagus everywhere.
Yeah. And by that point in the game, you will have known what is successful by pairing a thing that's this color in this corner of the plate with this thing that has this amount of this ingredient. And now you have a new ingredient and it has a different thing. And you know that works well with the other thing that you try at this other restaurant. And you can kind of make a guess as to what might work because you've built this sort of working knowledge, having played enough of the game.
Yeah. And you can start thinking about which variable actually matters to the other variable. So for example, if we start off with a tomato tomatoes are best served right side up at the north part of the plate.
Sure.
And you get an apple, just alien apple, you're like, oh, it looks kind of like a tomato. It's round and it's red, it's round and it's yellow. You think, okay, well maybe it looks kind of like the tomato. Maybe I have to put in the north. No, it's not. It's just different enough. It wasn't the shape of it. It was the color that mattered for the north.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yellow has to go into the south.
So you have to experiment and you have to read the results in a way that gives you the right information. It's never going to be like a ding in a checklist that this worked. You're just going to get the feedback that was happy, but you have to isolate which variables mattered to that.
Right.
And make guesses. And then when things get more and more complicated, your guesses are going to have to be based more and more on your knowledge. And then it's up to you as the player to decide how much risk you want to take.
Yeah, you're a food scientist in space. That's the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's good.
And I like the scenarios you're describing, Lydia. It's a perfect example of like how we teach or encourage a player to try something by giving them limited inputs at first and then telling. So we would probably very much design those early ingredients, those early interactions without telling the players what we're doing.
Oh, yeah.
So they would definitely like, you know, you'd hear back that this tomato here was super successful. This thing, it's almost like a tomato, just as you describe. And so we would expect the player to learn that lesson. And so we would do that a few times early going, and then we'd slowly take our hands off the reins and let them experiment on their own and give them more confusing things and more opportunities to just put a bunch of random things together and learn nothing. Because we just have to trust them that they understand that, you know, they have to do like one variable at a time, scientific method kind of stuff, or they can be very daring try two variables at once because they know pretty well, mm-hmm. You know, or whatever. And then those things work well together. But then after a while, suddenly that those they need to have those two things apart and they don't know anything anymore.
Yeah.
And that's all going to be depending on how the player approaches every little challenge that comes their way.
I want to hear more from Steven because he hasn't talked all that much, but I've also been stalwartly taking notes.
That's why I haven't talked that much.
I know.
I don't know that I've been stalwartly taking... The thing about how game jams work is I like am trying to listen but also take notes but also participate, so I don't do good at either.
I want to give space for you to participate.
I do appreciate that, Lydia. Thank you.
I don't want to give him space for space. I don't know if I made that clear.
You butt.
I like this direction. I think that, like I said, I think I basically am boiling down to the way that this game works is you're a food scientist in space, mm-hmm. and you're trying to understand what food is mm-hmm. In these mm-hmm. different cultures, mm-hmm. And what that means to them, which is cool. I think that's really interesting because you're basically approaching food from a cultural standpoint and mm-hmm. less so about like the taste. Or the nutritional value, because that isn't relevant to you. All the food tastes
it's not relevant at a lot of restaurants.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah.
So I think that makes a lot of sense.
Although maybe one of the places you're at is like a healthy eating type place.
Yeah.
You can make the best tasting thing, but people would not like it.
Yeah.
Because they're like, that's not what I came here for.
Right.
Yeah.
They're like, this tastes too good. I'm suspicious.
Yeah. They're like the raw food vegans.
Yeah.
Kind of that don't use salt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they come in and they're like, this is the best steak I've ever had in my life, but but 0 stars. Because
I am so suspicious.
Yeah. Because there's no way that's good for me.
Are we ever going to tell them anything? Are we going to explain or give any cultural explanations for things? So for example, this isn't strictly about, no, this is about eating.
Yeah.
But in certain cultures, it is proper for you to face away from more senior people when taking a drink.
Yeah.
Or if you know, there's certain cultural expectations of you should save this thing last because of why. You should never eat these things together. Like in kosher, when you're eating kosher food, you're not supposed to have meat and dairy together at the same meal. And there's like a certain stretch of time you're supposed to. Are we ever going to, and are we ever going to tell them things like you should never have meat and dairy together because it's unhealthy, mm-hmm. you know, or even vague, like, oh, you shouldn't do that. Or like an explanation of why people typically don't do that.
I think that we shouldn't try to ascribe particular cultural associations with the food because I think that's a little bit in opposition to what we're trying to do in the game.
Okay.
I think that it is valuable to just like add little backgrounds about this particular restaurant, like why it's located here or something.
Maybe when you go to a new place,
you
look at the old menu and you see the little Our Story thing on it.
Something like
and you
that.
Have a universal translator so you can read it.
Uh-huh. So,
and you gain some clues about the culture that this restaurant is part of. Maybe the nicer restaurants have a stack of magazines in the corner that are like a monthly restaurant tour thing, and you can leaf through those.
Yeah.
So, you know, the kind of environmental storytelling basically mm-hmm. that could give some clues to players who want to go that way rather than having to do it all through experimentation.
So nothing in the sense of like, the sun should always be rising as a hint, cultural hint to like round things go to the north of the plate or like 6 is an unlucky number.
Well, no, that's,
you can have those kinds
of
things.
That's the kind of thing I was kind of, trying to, it's hard because
you want to be more subtle than literally just stating it out.
Like in the same vein of like when you're, There's a certain amount of cultural knowledge where you, if you're in it, is like, that's obvious. Why would you think otherwise? Yeah. But for someone who's not part of it, it's like, well, why would I think that?
I think I think that is entirely the point of this game. Yeah.
But I wanted to see if everything would be have to figure it out or if there would be environmental hints of.
Got it.
Like reasons underlying why you may see certain things manifest.
Now, this depends entirely on how simulated our system is. Because if our system is like varied and roguelike, this is why I don't like roguelikes, because you can ascribe no meaning to random numbers put in random places.
True.
Yeah.
And so that's where I have difficulty. Mm-hmm. Now, that we can have a roguelike system, but as long as everything else is okay, that doesn't ruin it for me. But if we wanted to have something where there were some truisms of certain cultures that we define in the game, proper world building rather than like assembling it out of numbers, then we would have, our simulation would have to be a little bit less robust and more bespoke.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of,
we're not making this game, so I'm comfortable with that. But like, I think environmental storytelling for some of those things that you can't learn, like, why do people keep not liking this? I'm never going to know why, because I make all these different, I move this over here and then they like it, but not as much as they would have liked it if I put it here for that place down the road.
Yeah.
And like, that's so confusing to you. And the answer to that could be in a little like letter from the editor on page 2 of the magazine. Could just like a little hint as to like, you know, that rather than it being spelled out, it could be like a missed puzzle where you learn a little bit about something by observing.
Yeah. And that's why I like having planets be their own cultures and ascribe, but maybe just how you, which planet you move from, like which, how you move through the planets be a little different every time.
Yes.
Because then one could say, oh, I'm at this planet again. And be like, okay, I know I remember from a previous playthrough what this thing was about. And then it happened to be the next one is a planet that you had not visited before. You go, oh, okay, I'm back to square one again for this time. And let's see how far I get.
A really fun sort of narrative component to that would be you're in this cluster, you're in this solar system, and you've been there 1,000 times, but now you're on, and there's like 3 planets, and you go to this planet and this planet, and you go back and forth these 2 planets. Mm-hmm. But then you go to this 3rd planet for the first time. It looks just like the 1st planet. So like, okay, whatever. And you're thinking that you're kind of going through randomly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But suddenly their tastes are totally different.
Yeah.
You don't know why.
Yeah.
It's because it's the little Tokyo of this solar system. And like, you just didn't know that.
Right. Yeah.
And like that sort of like entering a place and being culturally ignorant and like, and like the way you handle that, that learning experience as a player, I think is interesting and, you know, has an analog to how you are in the real world.
Yeah.
And like you live in a place all your life and suddenly you go to a part of it you didn't know existed.
Yeah.
It's very different.
I mean,
like, do you feel alienated by that? Do you feel excited about that? How do you feel about that?
Like barbecue culture in the South, crossing state lines, and you get a completely different way of what barbecue is.
Right.
Like, is it mustard based? Is it mayo based? Is it a vinegar based? Is it dry rub? Do you use pork? Do you use beef? Just like everything can be different if you hop a state border.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing is what you, because they're like, oh, that's barbecue. And you're like, is it?
And I think the having these sort of enclaves and borders that are sort of not defined unless you go there, it speaks to my thing as a game designer of like, I would love for there to be things you're never able to figure out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That you can get by and be fine, but you're never going to be, it's never going to be your home planet.
Yeah.
So you're never going to fully understand. You're going to be welcomed and successful, but you're never going to figure everything out.
Yeah. I think it's important that there's something that like grounds you to what like you're doing, because otherwise you're just kind of doing stuff because the game's telling you to do it.
Yeah.
But like if there's some kind of world building or background involved where that like you're getting sort of an understanding a little bit on like why this works here and doesn't work in this place, then at least players can like lean into that. You put it in the north and sometimes they like it, sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. You don't really know why. That's fine. But I think that like having a little bit of grounding, because otherwise
a solid 6 months of like world building and put a writer's room together and like really build it out.
Yeah.
And leave it less up to the simulation.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think this needs to, I don't, the game has kind of divorced itself from the idea of a roguelike at this point. I don't know that it needs to be a roguelike.
Yeah.
I'm imagining that a person who looks up the wiki is just trying to get all the achievements and they're not interested in playing
it. It's now just a game with a beginning and end.
Yeah.
We don't know what the end looks like necessarily, how long it is, but like, I'm perfectly comfortable. As long as if people want to play fair, they won't look at the wiki. Like we don't need to avoid that necessarily.
The one mechanic that hasn't been brought up that we started off with is the idea of pushing the boundaries of the cultural's taste.
Yeah.
Like, who
are you? Are you an influencer here? Or are you just trying to figure out how they do things?
And at what point that sort of influence and bringing newness and fashion of taste into a culture is the thing that we haven't decided and talked about. And that's one where it's that, I don't know. I feel like that's the one thing we haven't done, and that's the one thing that would make it a little more complex than one could just have a chart on a wiki for.
Yeah. And I mean, ultimately, the question is, are you a visitor or are you going to be an immigrant, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to weave yourself into the fabric of these cultures? And like, I think the answer to that question makes these two completely different games.
Yeah.
But they're both promising. I don't think one is better than the other. They are different though.
Sure.
Maybe what the little randomness element is that it's not you that's moving and changing, the populations are moving and changing. Mm-hmm. That the aliens are having their own ethnic diasporas, and as you play and visit the planets, you notice that different, that there are different looking aliens with different tastes coming to this planet before. And so you are naturally, by that point, you have mastered what it goes where, but that you are suggested to start hybridizing and mashing up flavor palettes and positioning palettes for these things. You see, and because also then of the distribution of feedback, and you're seeing things start to change a little, maybe. Mm-hmm. As different communities are moving in and out and having their own immigrant experience, their like their own like alien third culture food experience.
Yeah.
And as someone who doesn't know any of the rules but has desperately tried to learn the rules, now we're inviting you, but in a very kind of scary prospect, to start breaking them. And that's where maybe there's a little bit of randomness in terms of which groups go where.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think it could also be where like systems are, they're designed for you to be able to influence them rather than having to rely on randomness. So for example, I'll just take three adjacent things. So you go to Texas, and where did you come from? Did you come from Kansas City or did you come from Mexico? Mm-hmm. Because that's going to determine whether you bring barbecue or Tex-Mex
there. Yeah.
And right now, neither exist in Texas in this example, mm-hmm. right? So that could be how we build our world, is we build all our cultures. We have our writer's room. We design all these things together. And then we essentially give the player the opportunity to take something from one area to another. And then we have these sort of this maybe affinity graph for like how much these two things will be together. And so you can let the player build a unique thing. And this can be where the simulation can actually work without it being random.
Yeah.
The player can invent whatever they want as long as it satisfies the things that need to satisfy this culture, which is similar to the culture of the left and similar to the culture of the right.
We build in the player as the randomness element.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
And then you give the player some creativity, then they can name dishes.
Yeah, I was going to bring in Parappa the Rapper into this. Because you can, if you just do everything beat by beat, you'll get, you'll do just fine. Mm-hmm. But like, there's a way that you can improv your raps so that you do better, and then like you get to the great mm-hmm. ranking, and eventually you just
so we like karaoke bars at all these restaurants. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
exactly. I'm okay with that.
Honestly, I think aliens would love karaoke.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Good idea, Steven.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, but what I'm saying is like effectively what you need to do is you need to have your food be so satisfactory for them that they love it instead of just like it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And so, and this is what you were, I think this is basically what you were saying.
Yeah.
So you just need to determine what those qualities are and how to make it, and so that they love it. And once they start loving the food, that like changes things. And then like people start like going,
okay.
Maybe I actually do like things on the left or the right or whatever.
Right. Like you've essentially established a trust of competence.
Yeah.
And that makes them more open to you as an expert and open to new ideas. Therefore, because you think that, they make good food. Therefore, the food I'm about to get that's new is probably
this is the knowing the rules before breaking them.
Yes.
And I think
way to break that phenomenon.
It is sort
down.
Of what we were describing, but I think you've defined it in a way that is like actionable as a designer too.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. You just crystallized it so perfectly.
I agree.
That's why I'm here.
We were like fishing for it.
Circling.
Yeah. So that's effectively what I was thinking. Is like, there's some qualities that you can apply that make people love it, and then you influence culture in some way.
I also like the idea of people, because I've experienced this when I was playing Cook Serve Delicious. There were recipes that I got very, very good at making and very comfortable making, and so those were my ride or die. And I always, like, lasagna. Always going to be on the menu because that was what I had. If I had to be transplanted to an alien planet and it was Cook Serve Delicious, I'd be bringing lasagna. But for other people, based on what they figure out and how they play and how they figure things out, it may be very different ingredients. So I think that works really well, and also speaks to like what is most important from a cuisine that is worth bringing over and doing new things with.
Yeah.
Is it soy sauce? Is it cheese? Is it certain herbs? You know? That I think is also very true to that experience. Mm-hmm. I think we need a name now. I kind of want to do something with the idea of du jour to have it be really emphasized. Like this is a special that you're designing for every day. something du jour.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what du jour means.
it's of the day.
Oh.
So soup du jour is soup of the
day. Oh, okay. Alien du jour?
Yeah, what is French for alien is probably l'alien or something.
L'alien, yeah.
The extraterrestrial.
Yeah.
The extraterrestrial du jour.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Not a game about eating aliens.
Yeah. 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 Well, maybe we'll get people in if they're interested in eating aliens for some reason.
I mean, it could be very bold, like it could be galactic du jour, which doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah.
Oh, or like du jour galactic, you know what I mean?
Ooh, it could be like a very special dish. The idea of like, it's the special, but it's also very special, and it's like, oh gosh, I don't know what to do with this.
Uh-huh.
I had wrote down the Intergalactic Dining Consortium, because you said that.
I love that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the name then.
I mean, depending on their presence in the world building, that may or may not be a good title, but
oh yeah,
but yeah, it's a good, so it's something to start with.
Mm-hmm.
That's our show. We post show notes and such in our website, nicegames.club. Go there to find the rules of the game we made and totally give a name to that, whatever the editor said. Look at the title. That's what it is. Anyway. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes delivered to you 1 week early. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.